discreet with turning this thing on. Okay? I'll get it worked out more in days to come. I want to say that I'm really impressed. I hope that you folks know that you've got something really special here. In a lot of ways. I just never cease to be amazed at all you guys that get up here and have something to say before the Lord's Supper or your prayers, the depth of your prayers. It's really meaningful. It's obvious that you put thought and prayer into that, and I for one, appreciate it. Thank you. Also, I got a shock a few minutes ago. One more time, I guess Sonny's full of surprises, but about 5 minutes before time to start, I just stopped him. I said, do you know the song Learning to Lean? I don't know it. I'd never heard it. Obviously, you know it, but I didn't know it. And it fit right in with my lesson, and I just ran across it somewhere as I was going through the internet, and I think maybe I had heard that there was a song by that name and looked it up and got the words of it, and I had no idea how it went. It's a beautiful song, and I really appreciate Sonny said, well, I think I can work it in here, and within, 5 minutes of time to go here, well, he worked that in. So I'm just continue to be impressed, and I really do appreciate it. When we think of, so by the way, you know that my sermon, the title is Learning to Lean. When we think of David in the Old Testament, there are lots of pictures that could possibly come to your mind. Probably one of the pictures that would come pretty quickly would be a picture of a shepherd boy who's out on the Judean hillside, maybe at night under the stars, taking care of his sheep and his sheepfold. Or maybe one of the ones that would likely come to our minds is a lad who's facing this mighty Goliath with just a little sling and some smooth stones in his pocket. Or maybe if you've studied it some, you might think of a victorious captain of Saul's army who had slain his 10,000s. Or maybe you would think of the king who was rejoicing at the final return of the Ark of the Covenant, and he was dancing with his shirt off and uncovered and just having a great time and celebrating the joy of that occasion. Or maybe some of us might picture in our minds a man who has been incredibly humbled because his little baby boy just died. And he knows that God's hand was in this. But whatever picture comes to your mind, there's one scene in David's life that just somehow seems so very out of place in this picture album of his life. And if you were to have this album, if he were to have one of his life, I suspect that he would choose to leave this particular picture out. But I'd like for you to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 21. 1 Samuel chapter 21. And let's read together. And I'll begin reading in verse 10. Then David arose and fled that day from Saul and went to Achish, king of Gath. But the servants of Achish said to him meaning Achish, not David, is this not David, the king of the land? Now, by the way, he wasn't the king, but they had a reason for saying that, and they'll explain it here. Did they not sing of this one as they danced, saying, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s? And David took these words to heart and greatly feared Achish, king of Gath. So he disguised his sanity before them and acted insanely in their hands and scribbled on the doors of the gate, or scratched, some versions have, and let his saliva run down into his beard. Then Achish said to his servants, behold, you see the man behaving as a madman? Then why do you bring him to me? Do I lack madmen that you brought this one to act the madman in my presence? Shall this one come into my house? That picture of David as a man who, and I thought about trying to reenact that out. I'm not going to. If somebody would like to, you're welcome to stand up and You know, I mean, you know, he's acting crazy. And, you know, he's got this spit running out of his mouth, and he's got this duh look on his face, and he's just walking around and goes to the door, and he's just scratching on the doors like he wants to get out, like some kind of a wild animal. And slobber is just running down his beard and dripping off. What would bring such a great man to such a pitiful state? Of all the pictures that you might think of David, that one just somehow doesn't fit, does it? I mean, he was a great man in many ways. And as we think about this and contemplate what the answer might be to this perplexing situation, perhaps some of us, as we go through this idea, might see ourselves in this scenario in some form or other. Maybe there is a scene in our past where we have played the fool. Maybe there's a scene in our past where we've allowed ourselves to get in some situation where, because of fear or anger or hostility or something, we were totally out of character. And we look back on that if it happened in our life, and we would like to remove that picture from our picture album and like for that to have never occurred in our life. Or maybe if we don't see ourselves in that way in any form or fashion, maybe we can avoid finding ourselves in such a situation in the future, or maybe at least know what to do if we do find ourselves in such a situation in the future. You see, when you flip back a couple of chapters in chapters 18 and 19, it tells us a lot about David. And it tells us about the support system that David had, that he was operating with at this point in his life. You see, David's made some really good decisions in his life. And as a result, he's got a good life going here, doesn't he? He has lots of things going for him. I mean, his life is working out the way it's supposed to. He made some good, wise decisions as a young man. He learned to trust God, and that found ways to be demonstrated in his life. And then good things started happening to him. I mean, incredibly good things. He has found himself in chapter 18, verse 13, as the captain over 1,000 men. And he's a kid. And we learned in our Bible class lesson this morning something about the apostles when they were called and how young they were. And I don't know about you, but that changed my view of those guys as they traveled around. Well, David is still a kid, but Saul puts him over, his captain over and over a group of 1,000 fighting men. And they like it. And that says a lot. And you think that's a pretty heady job for a young guy, isn't it? I mean, he's got lots of people who are looking up to him. His superiors respect him. His peers respect him. Those who are under him respect him. He's got a great job. And not only that, he's got lots of friends. In chapter 18, verse 16, it says, all Israel and Judah love David. He's in high demand. He's popular. His fame is spread. And all these things are confidence builders, aren't they? And not only that, but he has the support of powerful, close associates. The first one being his wife. You remember who he married? He married the king's daughter. That ain't bad. I mean, besides being good looking, she was rich and powerful. And that's and not only that, but it says in chapter 18, verse 20, and her name was Michal, it says she loved David. He had a wife that adored him. And then he had as his closest friend was Jonathan, the king's son, another powerful guy. And it said that Jonathan loved him just like he loved himself. So much so that he gave him his robe and he gave him his armor that included his bow and his sword and his belt. And he just gave him all of these, the best that money could buy. And this was his friend. And then not only that, but he had as his confidant an older man, the prophet Samuel. And whenever he became a fugitive and Saul began chucking spears at him, then the first place when he ran, the first place he thought about going was to Samuel's house. And he went and looked up Samuel. And Samuel took him, and together they went to a little secret hideaway place. And that's in chapter 19, verse 18. And he also had the support of success and pride. Chapter 18, verse 14 says, David was prospering in all his ways, for the Lord was with him. And so he had a good sense of self-esteem, didn't he? Self-worth, personal value. He had lived a good life, he had made wise decisions, and things are really paying off for him now. Now, let's stop for just a moment and make a little bit of an application here. Your life right now. You ask yourself and you look at yourself, at your support system, and ask yourself, where would I be without my support system? Whatever that support system may be in your life. Wife, husband, children, parents, friends, maybe job. Associates, things that maybe you've accumulated in your life, mentors, and without these blessings, where would you be in life? And so stop and give thanks for the things, the support system that God has given you. But in this picture that we just read, as David is this slobbering fool, he's lost his support system. I mean, just methodically. One by one, in short order. At the height of his success as an extremely young man, his fortunes turned, and he soon lost all of these things. He lost his job when Saul became jealous and started chunking spears at him in chapter 19, verse 8 through 10. David becomes a fugitive. He goes to Jonathan after he has to flee from the prophet's hideout. And he starts trying to persuade Jonathan that his dad's trying to kill him, and Jonathan doesn't believe it. And he says to Jonathan, there's hardly a step between me and death. He said, I'm just barely ahead of death. Your father is trying everything to kill me, and I'm just barely staying ahead of him. So he lost his job. He lost his popularity whenever it became known that the king had thrown spears at him and had sent people to try to find him to kill him, then everybody assumes that the king's going to get the job done, and so who's going to receive him into their house? His friends are gone. He's lost his popularity. And then the next thing, he loses his close associates one by one. He loses his wife. And as you probably know, she ends up, whenever he's on the lam, she ends up marrying somebody else. And when he eventually does get her back, their relationship's never going to be the same again. It's not going to say of Michal anymore that she loved David. In fact, the most memorable event that will be recorded between the two of them is when she criticizes David for acting like a fool in front of all the populace out here. And then 2 Samuel chapter 6, verse 16 says, she despised him in her heart. He lost his wife's support. And in 2 Samuel chapter 20, tells the story of the parting between himself and Jonathan. And that's one of the saddest scenes in the Bible, at least to me. It says, and they wept together, but David wept more. Because he's never going to see Jonathan again. Jonathan is going to die in battle with his father and his two brothers. And the Philistines are going to decapitate them and take their heads as war booty and hang them on there for display for people to come and see their lifeless heads on stakes. And then he also lost the close relationship with Samuel, not because Samuel turned his back on him, but because Saul kept watch on Samuel because he knew that Samuel would help him if he got the chance. And so he was forced to leave his old friend and mentor, Samuel, because Saul had discovered that he was being hidden by Samuel. And so now here he is. He's fled to his arch enemy, the Philistines, Agag, or Achish, excuse me. And now, terrified for his life, here we see him scratching, slobbering in his beard, the mighty giant slayer, the champion of Israel, the pride of the nation. Now he's lost his pride, and he's alone. And he's terrified. He has no friends. He has no job. He has no future. And he has no pride. And God has a hand in this. And I ask myself, why would God allow David to come to such a state as this? How are the mighty fallen? I mean, I love David, don't you? I love reading about David and the love that he had for God and the tenderness of his heart and how often he had the opportunity to get back at his enemies, but he wouldn't do it. He didn't do it. He wouldn't touch God's anointed. But I think that God allowed this to happen because he wants David to learn where to lean. He wants David to learn where to put his trust. You know, Romans chapter 1 says, it talks about the Christian life, and it says it is from faith unto faith. And that's quite a statement. It's an incredible statement. Lots of entire commentators have written long dissertations about what that means. From faith unto faith. And as I grow older, it occurs to me more and more that everything about the Bible, everything about what God wants from me is about that one thing. He wants me to trust him. And that's what the whole Bible is about, from beginning to end, from faith unto faith. It's all about faith. It's learning to lean. It's learning who you can trust. It's learning who's going to be there for you. It's learning where security comes from. And God brought David to this point because he wants to make something more of David than he is. He has great plans for him. And when we're young, we start out leaning on our parents. And as we grow older, we learn to lean on friends, maybe teachers, and education, job, money, maybe success, maybe popularity. And when these physical things become our security, as we talked something about this morning, we need to learn that these things do not and cannot provide security. And we need to learn not to lean on those things. It's a good thing that God has given us these things. But we need to learn not to lean on them. We need to learn that we don't have to have these things to be faithful to God or to be effective in serving other people. If God chooses to give those things to you, that's great. Use them. But learn to lean on Him. And that's the reason it is so difficult for us, whenever God blesses us with lots of things, to even go to heaven. Because it's hard not to lean on those things. We need to learn what we can lean on. How many people do you know that have quit serving God whenever their support system was taken away or some portion of it? I still, at this point in my life, am amazed when there is a couple that has been faithful to the Lord all of their life and one of them dies and the other one quits. I never cease to be amazed at that. I don't understand that. But I've seen it. And I've seen it more than one time in my life. Or some misfortune occurs and some either portion or completely our support system is taken away. It's almost like people get angry and we decide we're going to punish God for taking that away from us. Don't we? I mean, how many people do you know that are angry at God because something happened in their life? God gave you something and then God took it away or allowed it to be taken away and now you're angry because of that. I don't understand. I'm not saying that I don't understand why we don't have a flash of anger about it. But I'm saying when we stop and analyze what God's done for us and what he continues to do for us. How can we continue to be angry at a God who only has our best interest at heart? Our support system can take the place of God in our lives, and God is trying to keep that from happening in David's life. And he's doing it early in David's life so that David will learn the lesson early, and so that he can become the great person that he will become. And here's what we need to learn. Sooner or later, we will, like David, lose every one of those things that make up our physical support system. We're going to lose it. In life or in death, we're going to lose every single one of those things. And let's learn to deal with that early in our life and understand that those things are temporary. And don't lean on those things because they'll break on you. They won't bear you up. They won't be there when you really need them. And God wanted David to learn that he could live without all these things propping him up in life. David learned his lesson. And because he learned it, and only because he learned it, he will become the man after God's own heart. He couldn't be that man until he learned that lesson. And out of his heart and out of his pen will flow some incredible, unabashed evidence of his love for God and his dependence on Almighty God. And I've just picked out one. I won't tell you where it is, and I just want you to listen to it. I'll tell you when I get through reading it. The Lord looks from heaven, David's writing. He sees all the sons of men. From his dwelling place, he looks out on all the inhabitants of the earth. He who fashions the hearts of them all. He who understands all their work. The king is not saved by a mighty armor. A warrior is not delivered by his great strength. A horse is false hope for victory. Nor does it deliver anyone by his great strength. Behold, the eye of the Lord is upon those who fear him, and those who hope for his loving kindness, to deliver their soul from death and to keep them alive in famine. Our soul waits for the Lord. He is our help and our shield. For our hearts rejoice in him because we trust in his holy name. Let thy loving kindness, O Lord, be upon us, according as we have hoped in thee. That was Psalm 33, verse 13 through 22. And you know, as I read this story and thought about this, it also occurred to me that the prodigal son went through a similar experience. Except his picture, his slobbering fool picture, occurred in a pig pen, didn't it? But it was his only way home. Have you ever stopped and thought about and asked yourself the question, if this young man had not been reduced to slopping the hogs, would he have ever gone home? If he had gone to that foreign country and made some investments and lived that lifestyle and had been able to maintain that lifestyle, you think he'd ever come home? It's unlikely. He certainly wouldn't have come home the way he came home, would he? He would have been proud and arrogant his whole life, wouldn't he? And so I draw a conclusion. The best thing that ever happened to that boy was having to slop the hogs. The best thing that ever happened to him was his money ran out. He went bankrupt. It's the best thing that ever happened to him. Am I right? Now, that's a hard thing. And I don't want to have to do that. I've fed pigs a few times in my life, but I don't want to live there. They're not the kind of creatures that I like to be around very much. And I had pretty good bit of experience with it. My dad raised hogs for a while, and I didn't like them. I liked them better than sheep, but I didn't like hogs either. And it's not a very fun place to live, but this young man was far better off when his support system was taken away. And so in your picture album of your life, there may be a scene with slobber running down your beard. In the past, or maybe in the future. I hope it doesn't have to be, but it might be. And in some of our lives, that scene is there, or some pathetic scene in the pig pen. And if there is, learn to be thankful, for God is teaching you who you can lean on. And God has some better things in mind for you, and He hasn't given up on you. Are you learning to lean on something or someone right now in your life other than the Lord? Then He might have to take it away from you. And it might really, really be hard when He does. And know this, sooner or later, you're going to lose it. Whatever it is that you're depending on, you're going to lose it. But if you learn to totally trust God rather than things or men and seek God and His righteousness and His kingdom first, you'll never lose your security. You'll never lose your treasure. And the song that we sang, at least one version of the words, "Sad, brokenhearted, at the altar I've knelt. I found a peace so serene. All that He asks is a childlike trust and a heart that is learning to lean. Learning to lean, learning to lean. I'm learning to lean on Jesus. Finding more power than I've ever dreamed. I'm learning to lean on Jesus." Maybe you're here tonight and God has dismantled some portion of your support system. He's done it because He wants you to come to Him. And like the prodigal son's father, He's watching down the road for you to come while we stand and sing.